From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Wednesday when Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a new rule for restaurants and bars. That rule? Any establishment with a state-issued liquor license must close for indoor dining by 10 p.m. That went into effect last Friday. The restriction is one in a new series of rules meant to help curb the spread of the virus as the infection rate continues to rise. Hospitalizations have skyrocketed across the country, and the virus is killing more than 1,000 Americans every day. Locally, the Finger Lakes region has a 7-day average positivity rate of 4.4%. For Monroe County specifically, it's more than 4.7%. Those numbers going up, up, up. Since this summer, Dr. Anthony Fauci has called for bars and restaurants to remain closed to prevent the spread of COVID-19. States like Illinois and Michigan have already announced bans on indoor dining. Meanwhile, a number of other experts say better compliance with masking and better testing and tracing could be enough to get us to the vaccine. Well, here's the reality. While there has been good news recently about vaccine development, we're not there yet. We're months away from widespread implementation. And the cold months are now here. I'm looking out the window. It's full on snowing today. So how will the restaurant and bar industry get through the winter or even the end of this year? The New York Restaurant Association says nearly 2/3 of restaurants in the state could close unless there is some kind of government aid. The association's president, who's been a guest on this program, said the governor's new 10 p.m. closure rule is a huge blow to the industry. This hour, we continue our ongoing series of conversations with local restaurant and bar owners about and staff, by the way, not just the owners, but workers. I mean, everyone's livelihoods are on the line here. They're facing big challenges. They've tried to adapt since March. We're going to talk about what their expectations and needs for the weeks and months ahead are. And we want to hear from you. How do you feel about dining or going out to bars and sitting down inside to eat? We asked you in the spring, wondering now, have your feelings changed when it comes to going out to eat? Let's welcome our guests now. The executive chef for Owl House Catering and Events is Candace Dole, back on the program with us. Candace, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Simone Boone is the owner of Apogee Wine Bar. Simone, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Amanda Jackson is a bartender and founder of Drink Me Cocktail Company. Amanda, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you as well.
And Vula Casetos is Vula Casetos Garwood, I should say, owner of Vula's Greek Suites, back with us now. Hi, Vula. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for having me.
I want to start by asking all of you to describe how things stand for you, your business, your organization, what's going on now, and sort of how you see the next few weeks and months in the current state of affairs. Candace, I'll start with you.
Okay. Well, I'm currently working at the Owl House restaurant, and it's been a difficult summer. It's been difficult since March. We have maintained a takeout program that's doing okay, but there's just so many costs associated with running a small business, and it just always feels like we can never get our heads above water. Despite that, we still keep chugging along and trying. As far as the restaurant group goes, there's some other sister restaurants and bars that might be facing some more unique challenges. But we are doing our best. Personally, for me, I've seen my hours, you know, working at the restaurant. I was working full time and now I'm down to working 18 hours a week on a good week. So just on a personal level, there's just been a huge slash in my income. I'm a parent of two children and it's just been difficult. And now with the winter approaching, there's a lot more. It seems like we're facing even more stressful challenges, and we're just hoping that we can get through it to the end of the year, or I guess to this eventual vaccine, mm-hmm. which we hope can bring back some sense of normalcy in the industry.
How have you felt about the new 10 p.m. closure rule?
Personally, it doesn't necessarily affect Owl House, but it has affected some of our restaurant groups, bars. Bars obviously are in a completely different category. This is a socialization destination for people, and you know the major part of that happens in the nightlife. My partner is a bar manager at the Playhouse Swillburger, which is one of our sister businesses. And he's definitely feeling the effects of that. It's drastically cut his hours, and it's just been tough.
Okay. Let me ask Simone to set the scene as well. And your wine bar reopened in September, is that right?
Yes, we waited as long as we could. We reopened September 17th. We cut our normal days that we would be open. We were open Tuesday through Saturday, and now we've been doing Thursday through Saturday. We usually closed at 11 p.m., so changing it to 10 didn't hurt us or didn't change things too much. But yeah, it's been very difficult. We have a very small place, you know. All the research isn't in yet about how this thing travels or how long it stays in the air. So we're in a space that's 550 square feet. It's a little nerve-wracking. So we're getting through it one day at a time, I guess, like everybody else.
What is sort of the range of possibilities for you as you look between now and a vaccine? And I talk about a vaccine like it's a single one-day event that magically changes things. I mean, I think we all know that it's going to probably be a rolling process. But I also think you know what I mean when I say, what's the range of possibilities between now and then for you? And what's the best case, worst case?
I guess best case is that we all stay safe. I mean, pros and cons, we're a small place. But pro, we really only have three employees right now. So it's not like we have this huge fat staff where, you know, many staff are hanging out and getting infected and things that, you know, have happened at other restaurants. So I guess that's a pro. We're hopeful that we can just stay safe and stay open. I guess worst case scenario is that we close and we try to find some other way to fund the business and pay our rent or the state closes us. Cause I guess that's pretty much what everyone's feeling is coming down the line here. So.
Interesting. So right now, if you and your colleagues were to guess, you feel like the consensus is, or at least the majority opinion is, there's going to be a forced closure coming?
Yeah, that's the rumble in the industry for sure. Everybody should prepare themselves.
Could you survive that without government help, Simone?
I don't know. I don't think so. Okay. I really don't know. Okay. I don't think so.
Yeah. No. I mean, look, these are all hard questions and no one wants to go there, but that's partially why you're here, is to let the community know just how severe the situation is. Let's talk to your other colleagues as well. Vula, I already have an email from one of your big customers. Michael tells me that I've been eating mostly Vula since the shutdown because she delivers and I trust that the food is as safe as it is delicious. I know you all have a lot of fans in the community and they want to see something work out for you. Give me a sense for what things have been like for you, Vula.
Well, we've tried everything. We never shut down since the beginning of the pandemic. I tried to keep as many of my staff on. So really, we've just are reinventing ourselves one day at a time, almost hour by hour, it seems like, as far as just trying to keep it alive. So I've taken on delivery driver duties. My dad's been helping me. My friend Eric's actually helping me out right now today since I'm on the show. We have extended our hours. We've shortened our hours. We've stayed open 7 days a week through the whole thing. And, you know, it's just been really tough. It's been a really, really difficult situation. And especially worrying about keeping my 16 staff members employed. So,
okay. And how do you see best case, worst case for you?
I need government assistance. I don't see us making it through the winter without it. I received the PPP loan back at the end of May. I actually got in on the second round. It did help me a lot because every week I was able to essentially borrow from myself is how I felt the whole time because all of the rules kept changing. I didn't know what to expect, what I was going to have to pay back, what was going to be forgiven. Without that money, I'd be in deep. It would be really bad. So I don't know what the future holds. I don't know. It's very, very scary. That's all I could say.
Okay. Amanda Jackson, take us through what things have been like for you.
Strange, just kind of going through everything and not knowing what to expect. Honestly, it changes week by week, day by day. So it's been a bit stressful, and not being an owner, having like the trickle down of them getting their information, then us getting the information, is it's stressful, honestly.
How do you see best case, worst case, Amanda?
I'm hoping best case, the bar is able to stay open and we can do like takeout and still keep going. Worst case is full on shutdown. Like we can't do anything. And then my job is just essentially gone.
Well, listeners, as we go throughout the hour, we'll read some comments from you. We've already got a bunch. And if you want to join the program, give us your thoughts on how you feel about what our guests are facing. I mean, you know, whether or not, listeners, you're willing to go out to eat or go out to a bar and sit down, you know, these are real jobs at stake here. And we want to kind of get your thoughts, but we're going to try to do it empathetically. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email us, connections@WXXI.org. Let me ask a couple of things about how you're going to survive the next few months. And Vula, you were very direct. You said it's got to have some kind of a government component to it. Yesterday on the program, we had small business owners who are not in the restaurant and bar industry. And one of them said that he's basically done with loans. What we need are grants. He said loans are sort of – loans put a lot of pressure on businesses, especially businesses that could be on the brink of closure. And
yet,
and even taking that loan feels like a big risk. And what is needed now is sort of cash assistance, grants, et cetera. What do you need specifically, Vula?
I've been very grateful to our local government for the help that they have provided by putting out the Monroe Fast Forward grant. I'm still waiting to hear back from that, but I'm pretty hopeful. As I've heard, they are sending it out to women and minority-owned businesses first, so I'm hoping. I have my fingers crossed. And the city of Rochester is also doing a great job offering grants to business owners. I mean, I need that money. Recently, the furnace broke at Vula's. And, you know, I was very lucky to have my landlord be understanding and split the cost with me. But that set me back a lot. Even $1,000, it'll set you back weeks to try. You can't even make up for it at this point. The rising cost of products, of just a nylon glove, the cost has gone up so significantly, like 60% per case, where I'm just trying to like catch up and find other ways where we can make money and keep afloat. I extended hours, hoping that even just like an extra $20 in profit a day would help in some way or another, and to keep everybody staffed. I mean, it is really confusing. Everything, and then trying to manage your feelings about the pandemic and your personal life as well. It's just, it's so much. It's so hard.
Simone, what do you need next?
We need money. staying closed for 6 months. You know, we just kept hoping things would get better and that we'd be able to come back in a safer way, and that didn't happen. So we, you know, we had to keep paying our rent, and we did keep our manager on the whole time, even though we were closed. So we, you know, we are hurting. I have to say, I appreciate so much the support of the community when we did come back. There's just so many people rooting for us, almost every person that would come in. We're so glad you're back. We're so glad you survived. You know, you make this neighborhood better. And it warms my heart. I really feel like we are contributing something to the city and our neighborhood. So I really, the support is overwhelming, and it keeps our heads up and, you know, reminds us we're doing something good. But yeah, we need help.
But Simone, generally speaking, do you think government gets it? Do you think government understands how difficult this is for you right now and how serious this problem is?
I mean, I think the city does and the county does. Obviously, the federal government is a bit of a disarray right now. So I don't know if they don't get it or they don't care or what. It's hard to say. It's kind of every man for himself is what it feels like.
Yeah. Vula, by the way, before I go to your colleagues on that subject, do you feel the same way? Because you mentioned that Fast Forward at least has been helpful on the county level. But looking at the federal level, where clearly the most power to help individuals, businesses, and local governments comes from the federal government, they haven't really done anything for months. There's still gridlock in terms of maybe doing anything at all. The president hasn't said anything about this in weeks now. How do you feel about what you're seeing at the federal level?
I just feel like it's not going to happen at the federal level. They don't understand the way our local government does. Congress, you know, in the Senate is trying to pass the Restaurants Act. It's like $120 billion in relief. Grant program that's supposed to be, you know, it's on the table to be passed by the Treasury Department, but who knows? I mean, I have zero confidence in any federal aid at this point right now. I have all the confidence in my community and my local government, and grateful for our very loyal customers throughout this time who have supported us with our takeout and with everything. So that's what I'm counting on, not the government.
Candace, how do you see it?
I mean, yeah, we need money. I think Simone made a really good point that when this began, we all were hopeful that within a few months, it would get better and that there would be some sort of relief or things would normalize and we would have this somewhat under control, but that's just not the case. And I think all of us, I don't know if I can speak for everybody, but I know I can speak for a lot of my coworkers and colleagues, is that we're just walking around with this feeling of doom lingering in our guts that relatively soon our jobs are going to be extinct and we aren't going to have careers to go back to. Without this aid and without money, I just don't see how these small bars and restaurants can get through this. None of us were designed or created with the idea that we would do these takeout programs. It's just not what we do. And despite how loyal our wonderful customer base has been, and thank you so much, everybody who has been supporting us, it means the world to us, it's just not enough. We aren't doing and we aren't generating enough business to cover the cost of operating. And that's really where we need our local municipal governments and the federal government. And I agree with Bula, it doesn't really feel like we can have any faith in that system at this time to help us. And it gets daunting to even just think about how many restaurants are going through this and bars, because it's not just locally, it's across the entire country. And it's just a scary thought to think, you know, what will our world look like without all these unique spaces to go to? And it's tough.
Amanda, you want to add to that? Go ahead.
Well, I agree also because I am a bartender. So, like, my job doesn't exist anymore. And doing the takeout programs is just something that is totally different from what we're used to. So everything is going to change soon. And also, like, with the doom, it's when the first shutdown happened, it was like, okay, we'll be done in like 2 or 3 weeks, but now we all know, like, that's not necessarily the case. So it's very scary.
Well, we asked our listeners on Twitter this morning about how likely they are to dine out, and you know, the overwhelming response right now, I think this is in reaction to the case numbers, is people are saying no. Most people are saying they're sticking to takeout or outdoor dining when the weather permits. But there were a few who said that they're still dining indoors. Brian says, quote, "Our regular places have been doing a decent job. Barriers between booths, having people wait in their cars, etc. The problem is the customers who get up and walk around unmasked or who don't wear them to begin with, and some of the establishments that don't enforce their own rules," end quote. So I want to talk about what you're seeing in your own industry right now and how you see that working or not. Candace, let me start with you here. What have you observed about compliance, whether it's your customers or even your colleagues across the industry?
My colleagues I work with directly at the Owl House are phenomenal. Everybody takes this very seriously, and they do their due diligence to make sure that we're staying safe. But at the end of the day, we're not babysitters of the public, you know. It's another new portion of this job that none of us ever signed up for, to try to enforce people to wear masks, sit down, don't do that, you know. And it kind of takes away from what it means to enjoy a meal out of the restaurant. Anyways, nobody wants to be told what to do. And unfortunately, this pandemic has also become volatile and politicized, so you never know if by speaking up and asking somebody nicely to just please wear their mask, what their response is going to be. Personally, most of our guests are really, really decent people who understand that these policies are put in place to keep everybody safe. But I know that's probably not the case across the board for a lot of people doing dine-in service. Mm.
Simone, what's your experience on this?
So, again, we haven't been open as long as everyone else, just since September. So I haven't had anybody be combative or, make it political or, come in without a mask or anything like that. Thank goodness. But I've heard in the community there's been plenty of those instances, which is unfortunate. Because, like she said, it's not our job. We don't want to have to enforce that. My husband and I personally hadn't gone out to any restaurants. We also have a small baby. We have three small children and just had a baby 4 months ago. So I think we've been a little extra cautious. We did finally go out, or I should say I talked him into going out to dinner for my birthday. And I won't say where, but only to find out a week later that there was an outbreak at that place shortly after we had eaten there. And that was terrifying. It's like, wait a minute, we were just there. And we spoke to some of the people who, were part of that outbreak. So it's scary. It feels like it's just so close. We're just missing it every time we go out and take the risk. So now, do we want to keep going out? And who am I to say, no, I wouldn't eat at a restaurant. I'm hoping people will come to my establishment. It's really difficult.
I know it's tough. Let me just ask you, Simone, do you think there should be some sort of enforced closure of bars and restaurants with government support to bridge the gap between when you can reopen? Or do you think right now, give people that space to make their own decisions?
Me personally, if they're saying that restaurants are super spreading places, then yes, I think they should be closed and that the government should give everybody enough to get by, the restaurants to stay afloat and all the staff to be able to pay their bills and feed their families. Absolutely. Hmm.
Amanda, how have you experienced whether it's, what you're hearing and what you're seeing when it comes to the public's compliance and what you're hearing and seeing from colleagues in this industry about how they're handling the needs to make sure they're complying?
So the bar that I work at has always been like a very nightlife-y bar, so DJs and all that stuff. And so it's been a very young crowd, so it's been so, so difficult to get people to wear their masks and comply to all the ordinance. And in my mind, I think like this is the reason we have to close down again, because no one listens. And I'm like a babysitter. Don't stand up from your table, put on a mask, don't do this. And it's something that's not what my job should be. But those are the things that we have to do to keep us safe and everyone else safe.
Mm-hmm. How do you see it, Vula?
Well, I'd say for the most part, 99% of our guests are happy to comply. It's only been a few instances that we've had some situations with customers. But those few situations was another reason why I didn't open up my indoor dining until the 21st of October. Like what Candace said, what Amanda said, it's like you feel it's another responsibility of your job and for my staff as well, because I'm not always in there, for them to have to tell people, put your mask on, please sanitize your hands before you sign the credit card, before anything like that, you know. It's pretty hard. People have been pretty compliant though. And our shop is a different kind of store. You know, we're open from 9:30 in the morning till 6:30 at night. So those are different hours. We don't serve alcohol. But another reason, you know, we decided just on Saturday to close the indoor was just in case there were any more people that weren't going to be compliant, and to expose us, our staff, and our other guests to the virus. It's just not worth it at this point. It doesn't make any sense for me.
Sure. I mean, and I know there are some sort of hard moments. I mean, Simone's talking about having dined out and heard about infection. And let me just address one other point, and then I'm going to turn it over to phone calls because we've got some phone calls that have come in on these subjects. In other cities, we've seen occasional stories of restaurants that had, I don't know if outbreak is the right word, but a staff member or multiple staff members with COVID and didn't tell the public or tried to stay open. Now, I don't know that we have seen any of that here, but I want to read an email from a listener who's asked to remain anonymous, who says they work in the industry, and they said the following, quote, "It's becoming increasingly obvious that restaurant workers are on the front end of exposure in our area. I know of cases from 10-plus restaurants in Rochester alone. The leadership at these establishments have run the range of responding with complete transparency to the public, all the way to hiding their cases entirely, in some cases concealing known positives from their own staff, or saying that temporary shutdowns are a precautionary measure when they arose from actual exposure. Does the panel think the choice by these places to keep cases private is necessary to ensure short-term staffing and protect income, or is it doing more harm than good?" Let me say, as I ask you that question, I don't want any listeners to think that that's widespread or that that's everywhere or that a bunch of places. I mean, I don't have investigative reporting knowledge myself of places that are doing this. But you hear stories and you've seen it in other cities. And so I'm just going to offer this with the caveat. I don't want listeners to be fearful. I mean, our guests are doing their best. But Vula, have you heard any of that? And does it concern you? And what do you make of the hard decision when an establishment finds out they've got a case and they've got to decide what they do about it?
I can just tell you that if we had a case, we would shut the shop down and have to quarantine, you know, for the 14 days, the guidelines from the CDC. But as far as other establishments doing that, I really can't comment too much on it. I think that the most responsible and important thing to do would be to shut down. And that's why the government needs to step in, because if that happened at my shop right now, I'd be screwed, totally, totally screwed. And I don't know if I'd ever recover from it. I don't think anybody should be hiding anything like that. I think that's pretty outrageous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Candace, what do you think?
I will just start by saying that I have full faith in our restaurant group, that we are the type of people that if we did have a case, we would be transparent with the public. That being said, it is complicated because we're all in such a vulnerable place right now financially that I understand why some places might do that, because it's the fear of being stigmatized, and then your business is you're going to generate even less business. And I can't necessarily fault people for making that poor choice, in my opinion. But I do think that, you know, given what I've learned through working within this pandemic with the crew that I work with is that we would be open and transparent about it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of put a fine point on that, Candace, it sounds like when you say it would be a poor choice, but you can't fault them, it sounds like what you're saying is people are scared. Their livelihoods and everything they've built is on the line potentially, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. These businesses are, it's anything, you know, we can't take very many more blows at this point. And to have to face something like that and to put it out for the public, it's scary. Because ultimately, we are at such a vulnerable point in this pandemic financially that it could put us out of business.
Yeah, I mean, for listeners who may be hearing that going, but wait, if you have an exposure, of course you got to report it. You got to shut down. Candace isn't saying don't report it and don't shut down. She's saying that's what their group is going to do. She's saying if that happens in other places, you just have to have the empathy that says the federal government has done nothing for months now. We have an entire industry in restaurants and bars that's facing a winter, increasing caseloads, dropping revenues, and fears of not just temporary closure, but permanent closure now. And the federal government's done nothing. So nobody wants to be in that spot to make that call. And Candace, and I think everybody's thinking, you got to make the right call. But I understand the mental anguish that must come with that. And part of that comes from the fact that for far too long, the federal government has done nothing. Simone, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with everything Candace said. You want to hope, you want to have faith that people will make the right decisions, but exactly that. The government needs to step in and make sure there's clear guidance because I don't know that there totally has been. And yeah, I can empathize as well that why people might not make the best decision and be the most transparent. Same thing. If something happened at Apogee or with one of us, luckily there's only a few of us, we would be 100% transparent. I've heard rumors too that every place hasn't been, and that's scary. I'm in the industry, so I trust most places. But honestly, after that scare, personally, we were probably not going to go out again. That was really scary, and it was really close. So we're probably going to stay home.
Amanda, how do you see this?
I think that the restaurant group that I work for, we have meetings weekly, and we all are very transparent within the entire group, and the honesty is 100% that we would talk about it, and if it happens, then we would for sure shut down. I don't know if it would financially destroy it because it's such a huge group, but I do believe that we would shut down for sure.
Again, I hope so, but I mean, everyone's in a hard spot. And I hope we're all thinking about
it is very scary.
Yeah,
too.
Sure. And I hope we're all thinking about how to protect lives and livelihoods. And that's why our guests are walking us through the state of affairs as we face a winter in the restaurant and bar industry. Hopefully the last winter of this pandemic. Good news on vaccines so far this week. Really encouraging news. But that doesn't mean that this ends anything in the days or even weeks to come here. We're still a ways away from that. So you're hearing from Candace Dole from the Owl House, Simone Boone, owner of Apogee Wine Bar, Amanda Jackson, a bartender, and the founder of Drink Me Cocktail Company. Vula Katsetos is a Vula Katsetos Garwood. Vula. Owner of Vula's Greek Suites. And I know so many of our listeners are such fans of their work and are hoping for the best for them, even if they're nervous to go dine with some of these folks. I get it. So let's get to your phone calls after we take our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, what comes to mind when you hear the word lobbyist? It's probably not a positive term. Pew Research finds Americans don't really trust government and they really don't trust lobbying. But lobbying is advocacy. Is there a way to do it better? Paul Hippolyte is a Rochester native. He's a lobbyist. He started a new firm. He wants to change all of our views on lobbying and how the entire industry works. He'll explain how next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Terry in Brighton first on the phones. Go ahead, Terry.
Hi. First of all, I just want to say that I feel so awful for you restaurant owners. I mean, I can't imagine the stress. Right now, I'm not comfortable going in restaurants. I'm being careful for my parents. But I just want to let you know about something that's out there. It's not a solution. It's not helpful in case of a forced shutdown. Not financial assistance, but Anderson Water, Power, and Air, my friend runs the company, is selling air purifiers that are portable, and they have been proven in a study done at the University of Buffalo to take out air particulates 0.007 microns in size. The coronavirus is 0.125. So it takes out air particulates, which are 14 times smaller than the coronavirus. So I wish I could just buy one and put one in everybody's restaurant. If you do get one, you get a big sticker that says, you know, you can breathe easy here. And it talks about, I mean, it was developed using the technology used by the Department of Defense to combat germ warfare. It's actually a company that's based in Syracuse. They're made in Oswego and shipped all over the world. So it's an option that's out there. They're not cheap like the ones you get off of Amazon, but they're our financing options and things. So anyway, and also it helps my allergies in my home. So they're all gone. Actually, yeah. And I live with all the animals I'm allergic to. So I just want to let you know, for what it's worth, that's out there.
Well, Terry, thank you. I appreciate that. So let's do this here. Let me just ask our guests. I mean, what Terry's talking about, the air is a big issue, especially in indoor settings. But there's also other creative solutions that have been proposed. And one of them, for example, comes from a Harvard epidemiologist named Dr. Michael Mina, who's been saying for months now that we've got to get up online and get moving with these saliva tests. He says, you want to go into a bar or restaurant? You want to go into a school? You want to go into a building or shop? Take a saliva test. You get the results in 10 to 15 minutes. And as long as it's not positive, you're good to go. Now, they are not as effective as the nasal test, but they're just about instant. And what they do detect is the spreadable virus better than just about anything else. So Dr. Mina says these are what we should have outside every bar and restaurant. So I guess with Terry's idea, with what Dr. Mina is saying, sometimes you hear about different ideas for testing and tracing. I'm curious to know if any of our guests have kind of explored other creative solutions to kind of keep things going. Vula, anything like that coming up, whether it's ventilation testing or otherwise?
Yeah, I've thought about looking in, you know, I have looked into like air filtration and systems and stuff like that. But I mean, it's not possible to afford that right now. And Terry, thank you for the recommendation. As far as the portable air purifier, I haven't really heard anything about that. So I'll be looking into that. And I appreciate your call.
Okay. Candace, what about you? Anything on the list of sort of creative, funky ideas to handle all this?
I am 100% for a mouth swab. As somebody who's been getting tested weekly with the brain swab, I can't wait for that. Just throw that out there. I'm going to just add to what Vula said. Those recommendations are so wonderful, and in a perfect world, we would already have installed those. It's just that those are those costs. For example, at Owl House, we had replaced furniture because it was easier to sanitize. We got different types of tables. We put up partitions recently in our indoor dining, which we just recently shut down again because it's just simply not safe to be doing that right now. We've really tried. We bought outdoor heaters for our patio to extend the season as long as we possibly could. Thank you, Mother Nature. It was really amazing. November was beautiful. But again, all of those things cost money, and it's just, you know, restaurants just don't have that much money to buy these things right now. And again, that would be wonderful if there were grants available for installing these sorts of things. But that's just not really the case right now.
Okay. Simone, what about you?
We actually did buy an air purifier. Well, that's not true. My husband's company gifted us an air purifier. So we have a pretty nice one in there. And strangely, I think it just makes me feel better. I think most people, you know, that come in have kind of moved on. They're not that concerned about it. So we've had the window open, keep the door open, even though it's cold. It makes me feel better, and hopefully it makes other people feel safer. And that's about all we can do. I would be all for a mouth swab, too. I can't see why you wouldn't.
I must be like the last person in Rochester who doesn't really mind the brain swab. I mean, I hear.
Oh my God. What?
I don't like it, but you know, I mean, it's faster. And
okay.
I'm talking to four women. Men are the men are the weak ones here. Women are the. Oh boy! Listen, I would love a spit test too. I'm down for a spit test. Amanda, anything you want to add to this maelstrom?
I think we've got it all covered.
Okay. Let me get back to your phone calls. I'm not advocating for brain swabs forever for everyone. I'm just saying. I mean, if that's what we got to do. All right, Fred in Rochester next. Go ahead, Fred.
Hey, I just wanted to give kudos to all the folks that are doing a great job. I know a couple of folks on the panel today, and I was at Bulla's twice this week. But
thank you.
Can do that when I'm single and don't have a car payment. But I wanted to tell everybody that's listening, you know, if you can afford to go out and eat, but dig deep and give a good tip, because the folks are struggling. All your favorite restaurants are struggling. And with the diminished capacity, and they rely on the extra tips. The folks aren't making a whole lot of money. There's not people lined up out the door most times. Dig deep and be generous.
That's really, really good stuff. Fred, thank you. I really appreciate that sentiment, because part of the reason we wanted to have Candace and Simone and Amanda and Vula with us today is we've been doing regular conversations with small business owners. This is a look at bars and restaurants. And we wanted listeners to have no confusion about how serious this is. The Restaurant Association of New York State says we could see 60% or more of restaurants and bars close permanently if this pandemic rolls right through the winter into the spring and there's nothing that comes for help from the government. I mean, that's not sort of a saber rattling. That's not a threat. That is very much real. So to Fred's point, a lot of people are struggling themselves, and I get it. This is aimed at people who are hanging in there and doing pretty well. Think about your favorite place to go out to eat or go have a drink, and think about what it would mean to them to support them however you can. Now, if you're not comfortable going out and sitting down, that's fine, but there's probably a lot of ways to help. I would guess there are gift cards. There's probably different things that you can do, dining and takeout, tipping wonderfully, sure. But be thinking about that, because we don't want to be a community in 2021 that sees mass closures and only chains left. And there's nothing wrong with chains. We love you too. But that's what we're facing if we're not really serious about this. That's why we're having this. Candace, how can people support you if they're sort of not comfortable leaving the comfort of their homes?
I just want to make one point that I think I really want to stress for the public and people who might not understand what we're going through right now. Since the beginning of the pandemic, the major goal, the goal for all of these small restaurants has been to simply break even. We're not even looking to make profits. We're just looking to get through this, which most of us are having a difficult time doing. Things that you can do, again, if you are financially in a position to be able to do this, please order takeout, order cocktails, please support our drink programs, buy gift cards if you can. And at Owl House, we also offer catering. We have holiday catering. If you're having a small get-together at your house and you want to have a nice meal and a beautiful spread, we can do that for you. And I know a lot of these small restaurants and these bars are able to do that too. So if you are looking for catering, maybe instead of going to some big-name places or some large grocery store chains that really don't need your support as much as us right now, consider giving us a call or shooting us an email to provide those services for you.
Okay. And by the way, if people are going cocktails, if you haven't remembered, you can order cocktails from places like, I mean, that's still going on, right, Candace?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
With the new ordinance, it can't go past 10 p.m., but that is a really, that's a great way to support local restaurants. I know it's easy to go to the liquor store and just buy yourself a cheap bottle of Jim Beam, but if you can support us in that way, it is a really big help for restaurants.
Yeah, there you go. I know somebody the day after the election, watching results come in, was so nervous, and then things started to shift the way they did, and they invented a cocktail, and they called it the Pennsylvanian. But most people aren't that creative. So if you want good creative stuff, it's really, really easy to do, and it kind of is a nice little pick-me-up in the middle of the week. Simone,
yeah,
what works for you, Simone? I mean, for people who don't want to leave the home but want to help you.
Yeah, gift card, gift card, gift cards. We have Christmas coming up. I'm personally committing to buying, spending a lot of money locally for all Christmas gifts for family and friends. Since March, I've gifted almost every birthday for friends, local restaurant gift certificates. So I'm just trying to commit to that. Amazon has enough money. Let's support our local restaurants by buying gift cards, because the restaurants and bars can use that money now, you know, that they need. And then when things are in a better place, then you can come back in, and it's kind of a win-win. So yes, please buy gift cards.
Okay. Amanda?
I think it's all been said, to be totally honest. Gift cards and booze to go, all of that helps right now in the immediate when we need the help the most. And then when things clear up, hopefully sooner rather than later, you can use those gift cards.
All right. Vula?
I agree with the gift cards. It's kind of like you're investing in your favorite shops. But I would say something that you can do without spending any money would be to share and like posts made by these small businesses on social media, because the more reach we have through social media, the more customers base we have, and then we might get a couple more takeout orders, you know, that week because of it. And those few orders really make a huge difference. So I think like, share, repost. You know, we're all kind of shut down in our homes anyways right now. So I think if you don't have the means and you want to help out small business, that's one really, really good way to do it. Also buying, you know, merchandise and gift cards, just getting takeout, even if it's just you come in for a slice of baklava, it helps.
Everything helps. Very good. Let me get back to the phones. Jane in Rochester next. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. I was the one that said money, money, money. It's all about the money. It's all about the greed. But I want to bring it closer to home, Evan. You talked about the federal government. Vula, it's Aunt Jane.
Hi, Aunt Jane.
Hi, Vula. I have been self-isolating, so I've been watching a lot of local meetings, and the city council has been my main target, and my gut feelings go from frustrated to angry to sad, because when I watch every one of those meetings, they never talk about the small businesses. They don't talk about the restaurants in Rochester. So I would ask all your listeners to keep the pressure on our local government to take care of our small businesses.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, we're hearing, Jane, from whether it was Vula, I think, maybe some of our other guests. In the last couple of days, there's been some praise for Monroe County in their work, but I hear you. And Vula, you want to respond there to Jane?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the Monroe County Fast Forward program. When they announced it, I applied for it on the first day. It really surprised me, and I think that it's a wonderful thing that Monroe County is doing to try to help our small businesses. Yes, you know, everybody could do more, but I really, truly think that the federal government needs to step in right now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bickering in the U.S. Senate and frankly, just a lot of inaction. So
it's going to be like too late in 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
When we have to pay rent again, it's like, we got to do something.
Yeah. All right. Down to our last 90 seconds. So Candace, I'm going to turn to you for some final thoughts here. You've been probably the most blunt of the group throughout the hour, but I think that's important. I think people need to hear it.
So, that's me.
So I'm going to give you some closing space for whatever you want to leave with listeners as we think about what's going on in bars and restaurants.
I just want to stress how important small businesses are. We generate income and money for people locally. We pay people, and then those employees turn around, they buy houses in the community, they support other small businesses in the community. The money stays local. We are at this crossroads now where we're looking towards our future, and we're just going to see these corporations taking over everything. We need to support our small businesses now, because they really support strong local communities.
Well, I appreciate all four of you, and frankly, you're repping your entire industry. I know you got a lot of great colleagues who are listening or not on the program, and we're going to keep talking to you and your colleagues throughout the winter as we head into the winter. Hopefully more good news and better news ahead. I know it's going to be a hard time, but thank you. Candace Dole, Executive Chef for the Owl House Catering and Events. Thank you, Candace. Good luck to you. Let's stay in touch.
Thanks, Evan. Appreciate it.
Simone Boone is the owner of Apogee Wine Bar. Good luck to you, Simone. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Amanda Jackson is a bartender and the founder of the Drink Me Cocktail Company. Amanda, good luck to you. Here's hoping for better
thank
news
so
ahead
much.
Here. Yeah, thank you. And Vula Casetas, Garwood, owner of Vula's Greek Suites. Always nice talking to you, Vula. Let's stay in touch throughout this winter.
Me too.
Yeah, let's hope for a better 2021 for all of our guests and everyone in the industry. Good luck to you, and stay in touch with us. We want to know how you're doing. Megan Mack is the producer. Rob Braden is the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. We've got more connections in just a moment after this and the NPR News at the top of the hour.